I have an assumed genetic predisposition.
Okay.
Because my father, my grandma, my uncle, my brother, all diabetic.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, it means I have a strong genetic predisposition.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to season 4 of the Rhinoplasty Podcast. I can't believe we're into our 4th year of doing the Rhinoplasty Podcast. I'm so excited for the season. It's really going to be a great year, 2024, for us. And kicking off the season is a man who has had such an influence around the world of rhinoplasty, all the way from South Korea, and is part of our faculty for the World Rhinoplasty Day later on this year. It's really great to have him back on the show after a few years. Yongju Jang, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Cameron, for having me again. So I really enjoyed my previous talk with you about rhinoplasty. So today I'm ready for anything you want to hear from me.
So let's just kick it off for the listeners. Tell them a little bit about who you are and where you live and what do you get up to every day?
Okay. My name is Yongju Jang. My last name is Zhang, but my many European colleagues call me Yang, but it's Zhang. I'm working as professor and department chair of the Assam Medical Center. This is the biggest tertiary medical center in my country. And I've been practicing in Assam Medical Center more than 20 years. So my work is mostly focused on the nose surgery, rhinoplasty, septal functional surgery, and the surgery for the empty nose syndrome and surgery for the hereditary hemorrhagic telangiectasia, those kind of things.
Yeah.
I also doing many researches, and especially in rhinoplasty and some basic science of rhinology. So I love teaching. I love seeing the patients. And that's me.
Awesome. So there are two topics we want to talk to you about today. Mm-hmm. Off air, we were discussing, we had breakfast, and I was like amazed when I saw there was like no carbohydrates in your breakfast. So that's the one topic I want to discuss. And then after that, let's chat a little bit more about the empty nose syndrome. But explain to me, you were talking to me about inflammation and how you have to look after your own health, etc., and how your food has such a big influence on your overall health. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay, it's based on my personal history on my health. From 2003, it was at the age of my 40. My hospital provided me a regular health checkup every year.
Yes.
So I did my health checkup every year. It includes glucose and HbA1c and all the other stuffs and ribosoma too. And from the 2003, I got a report that I have a little bit of elevated glucose level. It's over 100. And I was diagnosed with a little bit of mild fatty acid. Mm-hmm. But at that time, I was not that fat. Mm-hmm. I was kind of a thin guy.
Yeah.
I just neglected. I overlooked it. But after 2003, in every regular checkup, I have elevated blood glucose level, fasting level, and mild fat liver. The other problem is that I have sometimes I have very severe glucose spike, mm-hmm. and hypoglycemic event, mm-hmm. which made me very, very difficult in physically and mentally.
Yeah.
But I didn't consider it seriously.
Yeah.
I just overlooked it because they say that you are pre-diabetes. You are not diabetes yet, but you have to be careful because you can become diabetes in some day.
Yeah.
So that's what I heard. But in 2012, one of my friend who is as thin as me, shockingly have a coronary artery stent because of the coronary artery stenosis.
Yeah.
So it shocked me. So I decided to take the coronary artery CT scan.
Okay.
So I found that the report says that I have two stenosis in coronary artery.
Wow.
It was moderate degree stenosis, more than moderate degree. So I was really shocked. So I look back my data and what what caused this problem? Because I don't smoke.
Yeah.
My blood pressure is very good. I'm not obese. So I was really curious and shocking, and I reviewed all of my lab data, which was done every year. And what I noticed was that I have consistently elevated fasting blood glucose level, and I have a mild fat liver all the time. And the one other thing is, from 2007, my hospital included fasting insulin level in my checkup. And I noticed that there's a sharp increase in insulin level from 2008. Wow. Yeah, it was beyond normal range, quite high. So, and I studied myself, I researched myself. So I came to realize that my coronary artery problem, stenosis, was due to pre-diabetes,
yeah,
and insulin resistance.
Okay.
So the elevated insulin level means that your pancreas pump out insulin, but because it does not work properly in the peripheral tissue, it's pumped more and more. Then your body became more and more insulin resistant. And then, you know what? The insulin is an anabolic hormone. When you have elevated insulin level, mm-hmm, you will have fat liver. You will have abdominal fat, yes, belly fat.
Yes.
And there are several other health issues related with the insulin, elevated insulin level. So there are firm scientific evidence. Nowadays, insulin resistance is considered as an important pathogenic mechanism for the cardiac disease, just like coronary stenosis, type 2 diabetes. And for the woman, it causes polycystic ovarian syndrome. It's a very important underlying cause of the female infertility. And on top of that, I have terrible migraine. I have suffered migraine headache.
Okay.
And so, I could link to that, and I'd see all of my health problem was related with my insulin resistance and insensitivity to insulin.
One question though, in terms of your lipogram, mm-hmm, was that abnormal at all? Because in South Africa, it's a very common to have hyperlipidemia. And I'm on statins, for example.
Yeah. Let me tell you. Before I took the coronary CT scan, I followed my lipid profile every year, completely normal.
Wow.
Yeah. So I want to make a big challenge. So I'm not a believer of the cholesterol hypothesis of the coronary artery disease. Yeah. There are some guys who insist on that, but.
Yeah.
Based on my own personal health journey, lipid was completely normal.
Wow.
Yeah, so it,
okay,
blood pressure was normal, as I mentioned before.
Yeah.
So for me, lipid was not an issue anymore.
Yeah.
Zero issue. But, so I realized that for me, the main problem was the insulin resistance, because I have a strong genetic predisposition.
Okay.
Because my father, my grandma, my uncle, my brother, all diabetic.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, it means I have a strong genetic predisposition.
Okay.
And the other reasons for the increasing the risk of insulin resistance is stress.
Yes.
And inflammation.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Those are three important things. So, as you know, doctors have.
So those are the things you have to address to decrease your
stress and inflammation. Because I suffered from time to time. I suffered Hashimoto's thyroiditis. I had seronegative rheumatoid arthritis. I think those kind of things predisposed to the formation of my coronary artery stenosis. So. What happened was, after knowing that, what I did first was I just quit all the sweet things.
Okay.
All the refined food. I mean, If it tastes sweet, I just didn't take it. Because before knowing that, I drink Coke quite often.
And I
enjoyed the fruit, sweet fruit. I enjoyed sometimes snacking with cookie and rice bread and things like that. But I completely quit it. And then the very next year,
yeah.
I had a checkup again.
Yeah.
My blood glucose, fasting blood glucose level went down
okay.
to the normal range.
Okay.
My fatty liver is gone.
Yeah.
My HbA1c is quite normal. My insulin level became quite normal.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and then, yeah, that.
And how did you deal with the stress part of things? Mm-hmm. What about the stress part of things?
But it's difficult to control.
Yeah.
It's doctor's life. So for the stress control, I just to be more mindful about what my daily life. I try to let me just flow of life. So don't strive too much. Yeah. But I think the main issue for me was the increased the improved health was because of changing my diet. So what I did was I just cut Coke, I cut a juice, I didn't take any more sugary things. And then other than that improved blood profile, I lost 8 kilograms in 1 year.
Whoa, but you're looking, it's the healthiest I've seen you.
But
you were never an overweight, obese kind of person.
I was not overweight at that time. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then one thing I added more is after each meal, I climb up the stairs about 20
Brilliant.
Or 10.
Brilliant.
It, because the exercise after the meal can increase your insulin sensitivity. It really increases your insulin sensitivity.
After a meal. Exercise after a meal.
Yeah,
not
after
before.
A meal. Yeah, not
That's
before.
Interesting.
Yeah. After meal.
Yeah, because
because let me tell you, if you have something, especially carbohydrate diet, your glucose level goes up, mm-hmm. then insulin follows up. Mm-hmm. But if you do exercise, your insulin sensitivity in the muscle is increased,
mm-hmm.
so you can under better control of your blood glucose level. Yes. So it's proven fact that you better, if you have a problem in the glucose level control, you better do exercise after the meal, not before the meal.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
For those, so the listeners, we were actually going to be coming. I was going to say, should we go up on the lift? And Yonji said, no, I'm taking the stairs. It was cool.
Yeah, after the meal. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's the one enlightenment I had. So I started, I quit the sweet things and I started kind of low-carb diet, low-carbohydrate.
Yeah.
So I reduced the portion size of my rice. I tried to keep distance from the bread.
Yeah.
And it was good. But my metabolic health was quite good. But last year, for some reason, my migraine got aggravated very, very badly. I had once or twice a week, I have a migraine attack with visual scotoma. It really, really limited my everyday work. In the middle of surgery, I have to leave and take a rest because I cannot see. Because when I have migraine, I have visual scotoma.
Okay.
And the headache is killing me. So I was under many, many different preventive medication known to be effective for the prevention, but it didn't work. So I took many, many anti-epileptic drugs and many drugs. So, you know, out of desperation, starting this year, I came to realize that ketogenic diet has been a standard, evidence, proven treatment option for the epilepsy, especially the childhood epilepsy. So I decided to adopt that idea to control my migraine headaches. So I became even more stricter. So until last year, I took decent amount of carbohydrate, but this year I reduced it further. Wow. I reduced it further. And surprisingly, it worked.
Yeah.
It worked for me. So this year I just have had, so far I had just 3 attacks. It was much more milder degree. So my quality of life is really, really improved a lot. So after that, I became more interested in the dietary aspect of the health. So I studied a lot of the ketogenic diet. It has firm enough scientific evidence that that kind of the ketogenic diet is quite helpful for the brain health. Mm-hmm. And cardiac health, and many other areas of the, not to mention about the liver.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is an interesting notion that Alzheimer's disease is a type 3 diabetes. Have you heard about it?
Yes, I've heard, yeah, but I haven't really gone researched into it.
So it means that the patient who has some problem in the glucose intolerance and blood glucose level regulation and insulin resistance has about 3 times higher chance of having Alzheimer's. And there are many interesting studies about the health benefit of the low carb or ketogenic diet. Low carb diet and ketogenic diet is not the same, but it's similar. So there are some psychiatrists in US who has real surprisingly good treatment outcome after trying let them have a ketogenic diet, and their depression and bipolar disorders and schizophrenia is went away. Yeah, there are many surprising anecdotal data, scientific evidence. The only problem is I lost a little more weight after having restricting the carbohydrate.
And exercise wise?
Exercise, I enjoy exercise. I always do, as I told you, I enjoy climbing upstairs.
Yeah.
And after returning to home in the night, we have a very beautiful river nearby my house. So I walk nearby on the river about 1 hour every day with my wife.
Brilliant. And it's your wife who's going to come to Africa in a couple of months' time, eh? To show you a real rhinoceros,
eh? She's so excited, yes.
Yeah, so Yongju, 2 little other things. I mean, we're packing it in season 4 now. Talk to me a little bit about World Rhinoplasty Day. So you're the representative for that whole zone of the world. There's 6 different representatives coming in, and I mean, it's exciting to be able to have so many speakers from 48 countries to compete.
I respect your idea of getting together all the rhinoceros in the world, because perspectives on rhinoceros is different between continent to continent.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Europe, Africa, Asia has different goals and different techniques which we prefer to use. So it's... thanks to your effort, we had already won internet-based World Rhinoplasty Days. It was huge surprise and huge success.
Yeah.
And I think the second one should be even more great because we can share our unique aspect of rhinoplasty. We can share the knowledge and unique techniques which is preferred in a certain region of this world. So. I'm very proud of the to be selected as the representative of Asian. So I'll try my best to bring as many Asian colleagues.
So guys, I promised at the start we're going to speak about empty nose syndrome as well. Yongju, can you give us for the listeners out there, just a very brief 5-minute summary. I mean, we can speak for hours about it, and I love speaking to you on the podcast. But maybe you can give, because it is something that's not spoken about enough within the world of rhinoplasty and rhinology. Yeah. But share some of your pearls of wisdom with us, please.
Okay. The empty nose syndrome is basically an iatrogenic condition. So we coined that term when the patient suffers symptoms like nasal obstruction, very dry nose, and painful nasal breathing, and airflow hitting the nasal pharynx and trachea. Mm-hmm. And they suffer insomnia, sometimes anosmia. The prerequisite is that they should have some kind of nose surgery. It was believed to occur mostly after the aggressive turbinate volume reduction. That includes turbinectomy and turbinoplasty, and even radiofrequency volume reduction can cause emptiness syndrome. But I found some patients who have very severe spur in the septum. Mm-hmm. I just corrected it. But then he start to have the symptoms of emptiness syndrome. So the other unusual case is the patient who underwent quite aggressive endoscopic sinus surgery, mm-hmm. whose middle meatus is completely open. Mm-hmm. They also can suffer the symptoms like suggestive of emptiness syndrome, characterized by paradoxical nasal obstruction, unable to sense the flow of the nasal airflow, mm-hmm. dry nose, painful nasal breathing. So for that kind of patient, each and every nasal respiration is agony.
Yes.
Yeah, it's agonizing situation. Yeah, yeah. So they become so miserable. So they usually, they suffer insomnia, depression. We don't know clearly what predisposed first, but the thing is, what we have to respect is that there are certain subset of patients who suffer the unexpected consequence of the improved nasal airway after any kind of nasal surgery. Mm-hmm. So we have to be mindful. So as I told you, the most common reason for the empty nose syndrome is inferior turbinate volume reduction. So I'm very, very careful to manipulate inferior turbinate. So in 2018, in my personal history, I found empty nose syndrome for the first time in my country. So I reported, started teaching the empty nose syndrome to my Korean colleagues. So I published my first paper in laryngoscopy back in 2009 or something. After that, I published about 5 papers, and I started helping the patient by implanting the costal cartilage in the inferior meatus area. After elevating the mucosa flap through the piriform aperture margin, I can augment the missing inferior turbinate part. I started with ear cartilage first. But then later I found that ear cartilage is not enough in volume. So I started using costal cartilage because I feel pretty easy for handling costal cartilage because I use costal cartilage quite often for rhinoplasty cases. So, and then I found that it works. Not 100%. So I would say that about 60 to 70% of the patient got significant benefit by the surgical intervention. There are some other methods. I also tried to inject some stem cell, adipose derived stem cell. It was very difficult clinical study because, as you know, the clinical study is very difficult to design, it's difficult to have funding. So I recruited about 11 patients. 3 of them were showed effect. Just one single injection of stem cell. Mm-hmm. But my conclusion was not that it's not so promising because there are many difficult hurdles we have to overcome to get stem cell from the patients. It's very difficult. Mm-hmm. And so the other way I'm trying to help those, and in 2018 in European Rhinology Society meeting, I got invitation lecture about the Emptenhouse syndrome. So it's on the YouTube. Mm-hmm. It had the highest number of view among many Abdominal Syndrome lectures.
We'll put the link on the
podcast. So after that, I have many emails from the, all over the world. Last week, I operated a patient from Romania. Yeah, I got email from the patient from US, Australia, France, Russia. So it's a big problem. And so, and so far I operated close to 200 patient, Korean patients. Because whenever the Abdominal Syndrome is suspected, all the surgeons send the patient to me because I started treating them and I started teaching them. So, yeah, they are very difficult patients because most patients are quite depressive, quite anxious. It's just like a psychiatric clinic. So I should have many more treatment options. So nowadays, I'm trying to prescribe them ointment which has nitroglycerin component.
Yes.
So the my intention was induce the congestion of the nasal mucosa. Yeah, it works in some patients, not all.
Yes.
And the other option I have is I designed the nasal plug, which was hang outside on the ala, and then inside it has a ball-like structure, which can compensate the missing turbinate tissue.
Wow.
Yeah, it's working great. So I was surprised. So I thought about how can I help them? So I have a rough design, and I worked with a professor in our university design department, and then we created a plug, customized plug, which was based on the anatomical missing portion of the individual CT scan. So we collected data about 30 patients. So far, I tried that plug over 30 patients, and we collected about 20 patients. And now we are preparing the paper, so we'll submit it to some rhinology journal. So for me, rhinoplasty is my main job, but I have a number of patients coming with that clinical issues like emptiness syndrome. So I'm striving to find a good therapeutic option and to help them to live a better life without symptoms related with Abdominal Syndrome. It's really miserable.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Wow, man. It's so amazing to listen to your story and thank you for your time. Thank you, man. And I'm looking forward to seeing you again in a few months' time in Africa.
Sure. Yeah. Excited.
Yeah. Thanks. I really appreciate it. To the listeners, guys, may this be a little taste of what's coming in season 4. It's really, we're digging for gold in this season. We want to get those nuggets that are going to help us change our lives and change our patients' lives. So thanks for listening and see you again next week.
Take care.
Yeah. Awesome.
For those of you who are only listening to this on a podcast platform, please try and reach out and get onto YouTube, because on our YouTube channel, we've got some really cool clips where I interview the guests.